First time I've presented to actual people in 3 years. It's fantastic and absolutely nerve-wracking at the same time. So today I'm going to talk about the Scottish Sensory Hub, but I'm also going to talk about the Alliance, because the Sensory Hub is part of the Alliance. We might have some time for some questions. And actually, I was quite impressed when Mary was saying this morning that she is a presentations folder. I was like, yes, so do I. And I found my notes from 2020, and I thought I was doing really well. But there's Mary, found hers from like 10 years ago. But there were three things that I called for from the conference in 2020. So I'm going to come back to that at the end of my presentation. So for people who were present, see if you can remember what I asked for, what I called for from this conference. So, as I said, the Scottish Sensory Hub is an integral part of the Alliance, and I've just picked out three strategic objectives that the Alliance have that most closely align with the work that the Scottish Sensory Hub does. So that policy and practice is shaped by disabled people, absolutely fundamental. That the voice of lived experience is at the core, and that people are at the centre of everything that we do. One of the Alliance strategic objectives is also to promote transformational change across health and social care, and driven by a rights-based principles, and promoting innovation around person-centred and rights-based approaches, including principles of co-production and self-management. So the Scottish Sensory Hub works across the whole sensory sector, so that's, you know, sight loss, hearing loss, dual sensory loss, deaf blindness. And it brings the voice of lived experience to the fore. It came about in 2021, and it builds on the history of the Scottish Council on Vision Impairment and also Deaf Scotland. And we've got a team of five people at the moment. So we've got Dr. Hannah Tweed, who's just been appointed as the programme manager, and she's on paternity leave at the moment, so Mandy Andrews covering that role. We've got Janice McDonald, who was formerly the CEO of Deaf Scotland, and she's an associate director with the Alliance. We've got my colleague Amy White here today, who covers the deaf sector, deaf and hearing loss, and I cover sight loss nationally. The work that we do is informed by the social model of disability. So that means that the medical models very much takes impairment as a disability, and impairment as something to be cured or cared for. But the social model sees that disability is actually socially constructed in society, and it's disability is created by socially constructed barriers. So we take a barriers approach. And we also take a human rights approach, so it's a rights-based perspective. And we work around key themes of information, communication, and mobility, because these are the things that people need to have to be active participants in their local community and society more generally. In terms of the work areas, because of the nature of the conference, I'll focus on the sight loss work that we've been doing. But just to mention that the Alliance-led engagement in relation to the National Audiology Review, and the Scottish Sensory Hub also provides secretariat to the cross-party group on hearing loss, and that group have been working on a definition of deaf blindness, because at the moment there's not a formal definition, so they've been working on development of a definition of deaf blindness. We also support the See Here Leads network, which is part of the See Here strategy. It's implemented through See Here Leads. And I won't say too much more about that, because Susan Shippey is going to be talking about See Here. So focusing on work across the sight loss sector, we set up the Scottish Visual Services Steering Group, bit of a tongue twister. And that was a collaboration between a number of organisations, and that was to reinstate the graduate low vision rehabilitation course at Glasgow Caledonian University. And I know that Laura Walker is going to be doing an update on that, so I'm not going to say too much more on that, and I'll leave that for Laura to pick up on. But that was one collaborative piece of work that we were involved in. We also set up the Site Loss Research Network, and it's UK-wide and internationally. And this came about because Mary Thurston and I were having an online virtual coffee, as you do. And Mary had been conducting a literature review and found that the voice of lived experience was absent from academic research. And we got talking about that. And we said, you know what, why don't we start up a network where we bring academics, the third sectors, there's loads of great research going on in the third sector that doesn't get published academically. And if we brought everybody together with the voice of lived experience, we would have research that's informed by the sector, the research would meet the needs of the sector and people with sight loss themselves, and the voice of experience would be present in academic work. And actually, that network has really taken off. We also talked about having sight loss research in the one place so that you didn't have to go looking for it. Little did we know that the vision impairment, the VI partnership, which is the eight big organisations who came together during COVID, had already been doing work to set up an insight hub. And the insight hub will have all research, medical and social, in relation to sight loss in the one place. And that's been led by Bravo Victor. So we've been talking to them about aligning the network with Bravo Victor, because we feel that if we do that, then actually all the things that we wanted to achieve through the network will become far more possible. The other group that we set up was the Scottish Sight Loss Sector Roundtable Forum. We need to come up with shorter names, don't we? And that was really, that was about bringing organisations together to collaborate and to develop sector-wide responses, because, you know, everyone's doing bits and bobs here and there, but if we could all bring things together and do things as a sector, then actually we can realise the power of the collective voice. And that's what we did through, you know, working together to reinstate the vision rehabilitation course. So we talked about priorities for 2023 and what the sector would work on collectively. And some of the things that came up were about a gold standard pathway, eye care pathway, with minimum standards, you know, minimum service standards associated with that, because at the moment we don't have service standards. Also, equitable access to technology by people with sight loss consistently across Scotland, and the development of core accessibility principles across the sector so that we're all singing from the same song sheet. These are just some of the priorities. We actually, when I collated all the responses that I got from the sector, we listed 11 priorities. And when this part finishes, there's going to be a comfort break. And for people who would want to cast a vote on those priorities, you can influence what the sector will be working on in 2023. So Amy White from the Alliance and Jenny from Visibility Scotland will have iPads. They'll come up here to the front. And if you want to vote, you can vote. If you want assistance to do that, they'll offer assistance to do that as well. Another one that I added to the list of priorities, because we attended a webinar after having the roundtable forum, is domestic violence and abuse. So I've not followed my notes, so I'm just crashing through them at the minute. I never do. So in relation to domestic violence and abuse, a number of us from the sector attended a webinar that was visionary, it was behind that, and it was to launch the Unseen Report, which is actually one of the first reports about blind and partially sighted people's experiences of domestic violence and abuse. And this had actually, when I was doing my PhD, although I was looking at motherhood, a significant proportion of the women who spoke to me spoke about domestic violence and abuse. And so I've been conscious for a long time that this was something that needs to be worked on. It's needing to come out of the shadows, no longer be a taboo, because some of the statistics that have been published in a Public Health England report showed that disabled women and men are twice as likely to experience domestic violence and abuse. So we're looking to do some further research across the sector, do some further research in Scotland to get an idea of what's the picture in Scotland, and then look at sector-wide responses and initiatives to those, and also for the sight loss sector to work with people with lived experience, and also to have that knowledge exchange between the sight loss sector and organisations that support people who are experiencing or who are survivors of domestic violence and abuse. In terms of See Here, I'll just touch on that really briefly. We're in the process of setting up a lived experience network, and that's cross-sensory. And with that network, we're going to co-produce three task and finish groups, and that's around lip reading, sensory awareness training, and care homes, and possibly care at home as well. So that's quite a big remit. But how does this all shake down to individuals? Because we also receive individual referrals as well. So I thought I would just share one person's situation with you. So I was contacted by a woman on behalf of her mother. So I'm going to call the daughter Anne and her mother Enid. And she contacted me on behalf of her mother, who's 92. Enid has sight and hearing loss. She had been assessed for equipment to help her watch TV and listen to music, because those were things that she enjoyed. But following that assessment, months had passed and there had been no progress. And in that time, Enid had become really withdrawn and depressed. And Anne's worry when she spoke to me was that her mother was just going to fade away, because that's what was happening in front of her eyes, and she felt utterly powerless. So I contacted the local See Here lead. They were able to ascertain the equipment that had been recommended but hadn't been ordered, and they progressed it. So she was provided with equipment. She was able to watch TV again and to listen to music. And I'd phoned Anne just to find out, you know, how are things going, because I hadn't heard from her, and she was absolutely delighted that her mum was once again just enjoying access to simple pleasures that actually contributed to a positive quality of life for her. What I'd say to you, if you didn't have the chance to attend the Alliance Digital Gathering, I would highly recommend that you watch Hilary Cottam's presentation on radical health. It's really worth a watch. And that's actually what we need across health and social care systems. We need radical change. They were set up years ago and they no longer meet current requirements, but they certainly aren't going to meet future requirements, particularly since sight loss is going to double in the population in the next few years. Lack of data doesn't help. It makes it difficult to plan provision and services. And as I said, at the moment, we've got no service standards. So we've got no service standards in terms of response times, when people are assessed, to provision of equipment. And we know that these things all make a difference. Timely access makes a huge difference to positive transformation to sight loss. And also in terms of evaluation, how good is our service? That's not a question that a service should be answering, because what's the answer you're going to get? Yeah, we're great. That question should be answered by the people who use the services and who access them. And that evaluation should be influencing practice and provision. So we need radical change so that people like Enid have their service requirements met in a timely manner, rather than being told that the staff members are long-term sick and no one else can deal with the situation. So going back to the conference in 2020 and what I asked of the conference, I said that the sector needed to stop using negative portrayals of blind and partially sighted people. They perpetuated negative stereotypes, and they were profoundly unhelpful to blind and partially sighted people. And I would question whether they actually raise funds. Just recently, Visibility Scotland have created a fundraising video called with an I Can message. And that is a really refreshing, positive step in the right direction. I also asked for greater collaboration across the sector. Little did we know COVID was going to help that. And through the roundtable, we're looking to build that collaboration to realise the power of the collective voice to effect positive change. And the final thing that I asked of the conference was that any change initiatives across the sight loss sector should be led and driven by people with lived experience of sight loss. So it's great that in the past 3 years, there's widespread acknowledgement that people with lived experience need to be up front and centre, informing and influencing and shaping our work, because people who live it know it best. So I'm going to call for three things from this conference. Radical change, nothing less than radical change. Set not just minimum service standards, let's set high quality service standards. In terms of collaboration, we still need more. Let's be true collaborators. And finally, absolutely, people with lived experience must be involved in partnerships, and any partnerships that we have to be meaningful and they have to be equitable. Thank you.